It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf.
And I am Jenny Taylor, and we are excited today to have a pretty serious conversation with a good friend of mine who I met through the military. He'll tell you a little of his background, but he is a former soldier, he's a veteran, and went to West Point and all kinds of cool things. Our paths cross. We now both currently serve as civilian aides to the Secretary of the Army in our respective states. But babe, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jenny. Michelle, thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be on y'all's show.
We're excited to have you here, and we've got to have you introduce yourself, including your name, because people might think it's weird that I'm calling you babe through the microphone. But Babe John is his name, and he and I met right before the pandemic started. We had a conference together in D.C. with the other civilian aides, and I just remember there being something about you from the beginning where I could tell you had a hunger for life and a hunger for helping other people find that hunger for life. So, Babe, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you and your family? Of course, introduce us to your name. And then let's get started on this great journey that has given you such a drive today to do so much of what you're doing right now.
Well, my goodness, Jenny, does that not feel like 18 years ago when we were there? Like when
you just several lifetimes ago.
Like, holy smokes, right?
Yeah, it was on the eve of the pandemic.
The eve of the pandemic, right? Yes, and just even yesterday, I was just thinking about this and dropping you a Father's Day note, which I know is always an emotional day for the Taylor family. I was just thinking that was the second Father's Day that I've known you, and time does fly. But yeah, my real name is Babe John Michelle, so it wasn't Jenny just trying to get a cheap date with me. That is my real name. My grandfather's nickname was Babe. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and I live now in a suburb of Cleveland, about 20 miles east, called Chesterland. But I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and my grandfather was in the Navy, never graduated from high school, and was just the smartest, best man I've ever known. You know, you talk about the greatest generation. He was in the Navy, so that was maybe the only negative part of his whole entire life. he didn't graduate from high school, and he used to sell newspapers on the street corners of East 9th Street and Prospect, which is in downtown Cleveland here. And what happened back in those days is, I think he's part of the greatest generation, and they were selling for like a nickel per paper. And what would happen was they would have to fight on the street corners of Cleveland in order to be able to sell newspapers on that particular street corner. And he got the nickname Fighting Babe because my grandfather was, I guess he was really good at confrontation, and he was really good at fighting. So his nickname, his entire life was Babe, and his real name was John. So my father, I was his first son, and my father named me Babe John after my grandfather. So when people normally make fun of my name, I normally start by making some off-color joke or say something that's a lot more serious than that. But it's something that I'm just so proud of because it was a tough name to grow up with. It made me thick skin. But as I look back now on my life, it's just one of the biggest blessings, because I've learned that, there's three names we're given in life, right? The one that your last name, which that's pretty much that comes from God, and then your name your parents give you, and then the one you make for yourself. So I've always tried to make my grandfather proud because, and Father's Day passing here, he was probably the person I looked up to the most in this world. But like I said, I grew up here in Cleveland, Ohio. I just kind of working backwards. I never had any desire to join the military. I was in high school playing. My dad was a high school basketball coach, and I was I don't even know what the word for it is, a gym rat, I guess. I just grew up in a gym my whole life because my dad was a high school basketball coach, and I wanted someplace to play Division I basketball. So my choices at the time were Princeton and West Point to play Division I basketball. And my parents couldn't really afford Princeton. And, West Point it was. I mean, those were the only two places recruiting me. And it was like, you have to serve you have to serve 5 years afterwards. And I didn't care anything to for the opportunity to play Division I basketball. I was willing to put in the work. Plus, when I found out Bobby Knight and Mike Krzyzewski were dealing with West Point, then I'm like, okay, that's the place for me. And I look back now and it's just kind of silly. And I know I'm talking to two Utah girls here, and Jenny and I have talked often about, Stockton and Malone and all those great teams and just the history behind with the Utah Jazz. It's kind of silly when you think about like my path, because as what Jenny and I do now as civilian aides to the Secretary of the Army, we're trying to convince young people on why to join the nation's greatest team. And I look back now and the only reason I did was to play Division I basketball. And if I had a list 1 through 100, this is the most important thing in my life and this is the least important. Playing basketball at West Point was probably 100, meaning the least important. As Jenny talked about, everything good in my life came from my decision to go to West Point and to join the Army. I met my wife there, who's also a really good athlete and a whole heck of a lot smarter than me. But I met my wife there. I made so many lifelong friends there. Everything, good in my life stemmed from that decision to attend the United States Military Academy at West Point. So from there, I was commissioned as an infantry officer. I went in and had some concussions, just some concussions from playing basketball and from boxing and just from some other things. So at some point, I was blacking out during my time as an infantry officer, and they gave me a choice to branch transfer, meaning to either go into a desk job or get out of the Army. And Jenny, I know you know this man well, but at the time, General Dempsey, as in the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, was actually an 06. He was a colonel in the Army, and he kind of knew what I was going through. And he's like, well, listen, they don't have joint domicile, but if you want to be stationed with Laura, who was my wife, he's like, you're going to have to, you're going to have to maybe take a desk job and you're going to, have to do some other things. And he said, I can make it happen, but act like they made it happen. And I said, yes, sir, that's no problem. And that's what he did. And I went out and was stationed as an EG officer out in Fort Lewis, where I served for 5 years. During that time, I was able to play for and coach the all Army and all Armed Forces basketball team, which was an awesome experience. I'm trying to pick the right words here, ladies. In my eyes, probably what I would consider a lackluster military career, meaning I didn't really do as much as I wanted to. I always felt, hey, I'm a West Point graduate. I was top of my class in the infantry officer basic course, and I wanted to do more. And I think as I get to my story, I think that kind of weighed on me. Or as a matter of fact, I know it weighed on me a lot. But after that, my wife and I both got out after 5 years. That's another hilarious story that we could probably tell in another podcast. But I was actually sitting on a train with her, telling her how cool and how smart I was. I had no idea that she went to West Point as well. And I was pretty much bragging about myself for an hour, and she just let me go and make a complete idiot out of myself. So I found out that she went through. I was saying, West Point's harder to get into Princeton and Harvard, and I'm this awesome basketball player. And turns out she's went to West Point too, and it was a much better player than I ever was. but after that, when I got out of the military, I needed to. My wife wanted to become a doctor. It was always her lifelong goal since she was a little girl. And again, I had this dream where I thought I was going to coach in college. I thought I was going to be a college basketball coach. And to make a super long story short, I did a bunch of interviews and I ended up working for a cancer diagnostics and molecular testing company called AmeriPath. At the time I was volunteering for a college basketball team in Kansas City where my wife went to med school, called the University of Missouri, Kansas City. They were going to pay me in a year what I was making like in a month in sales. So I've often told people sales was like the one thing where I could just go and just be pretty good at without really putting in much effort. So I wasn't very smart. I made it through West Point. I wasn't very, I was a 5'11" white guy that played Division I basketball, but yet I got my wife to somehow marry me. So I always felt like sales was the one thing I could always just go. She could only say no so many times before. I'm going to go ahead and spend the rest of my life with you. And I had a very lucrative career. It was really, really great to me at the time. I had a doctor, and a doctor kept asking me, so wait a minute, you have no sales experience and you have no medical experience. And I feel like that was kind of like the story of my life. Like when I was in high school, my guidance counselor said, don't even apply to West Point. You have no chance of getting in there. And I just kind of always thrived off people telling me I couldn't do something. That was something that, my grandpa Babe taught me. You know, don't you ever let somebody, you know, write your book. Don't you ever let somebody, you know, label you. And at that moment, I decided, okay, I'm going to West Point. You think I can't make it? And it was the same thing when I talked to that doctor, like, okay, I'm taking this job and I'm going to show you. And I did. I was rookie of the year, sales rep of the year, in the top five every year I was there. And then I was sales director of the year in 2010. So then once my wife made it through med school and she was a practicing physician, I came back to Cleveland because she did a residency here in Ohio. And it was just, it got to a point where I was coaching high school basketball and it got to be too much doing both jobs. And it's actually at the same high school that I went to, that I coached with my dad. And, you know, it was kind of a crazy point, Jenny, when you and I met, because actually going there, I remember I got sworn in August of 2019. Trying to think, that was February, right? 2019 when we met.
Yeah, February 2020. You got sworn
correct.
In August of 19. I got sworn in of January of 20, and the conference was literally the end of February as Italy was shutting down with a pandemic.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's my claim to fame, Michelle. I was the youngest civilian aide in the history of the United States of America at 43 until this Jenny Taylor came along and screwed up my fame.
So. Hey, I gave you 5 months of fame, babe. Come on, run with it. What'd you do with that 5 months, buddy?
And I enjoy the attention, Jenny. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then right after that, I actually was let go. I was coaching for 10 years at Bill Angeles St. Joseph High School. And we won 3 state championships and were on ESPN 3 times and was very successful. And a lot of politics and a lot of things that were probably out of my control. And I ended up getting fired. I don't even know the words to describe. Just kind of weird. But looking back, God does everything for a reason, and I'm really, really blessed for his, you know, for his purpose. And now I kind of sit in front of you as a lifelong friend, Jenny. I'm someone that I've always looked up to, and know my entire life kind of thought like, okay, this is what I was supposed to do, was I was supposed to coach, And now, and I'm sure as we'll get into the crux of our conversation here, I've learned that it's a whole lot more than that. That it's not really my purpose. It's thy will be done and God's purpose. And I know we even come from different religions, but I also know we serve the same God. Yeah. Right. And just in that story and that path, I'm just kind of amazed. I know much like yourself, because I've heard your TED talks and I've talked to you on a personal note, like just don't really believe that things happen on accident. And I feel like that's probably why I'm on your podcast right now.
Absolutely. All right, babe, we're going to take a quick break. I appreciate your background in introducing us. And then, like you just said, when we come back, we want you to get into the crux of it. Sounds like you've kind of got a dreamy life. I mean, your wife's finished medical school. You're both West Point grads. You're both 5 years of service to our country. Life's going great with your profession. Life's going great coaching basketball until it's not. But let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we want to tell you where things started to go south.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on kslpodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Babe, so tell us, where did life start to unravel itself?
Yeah, that's I'm asked that question a lot, Jenny, and you know, I think that's the thing about this, and I know I'm going to be tugging at y'all's heartstrings because with Michelle's history with cancer and with what you've gone through, I was sick you know, and you look at when someone has cancer, you know, I went through this with my wife twice. I lost a sister to ocular melanoma in 2006. We'll run to help them out, right? But when somebody is mentally ill, as I was, you know, we don't. So in 2015, we just won our second state championship in Cleveland. And like you said, on the periphery, it looked like I had it all. It looked like I was somebody who was, you know, just on top of the through my social media, like, man, this guy's got it all. He's got this incredible wife, this incredible family. And so I remember after winning the state championship in 2015, I remember my dad, who's coaching me every year I've been on a high school bench, just said, "What's up with you? You just don't seem happy." And I wasn't. And again, I can't describe it. I'm not a doctor, so I don't really know in terms of like depression or. But I was sick. I was just in a deep dark place. I had lost about 40 to 45 pounds. I had every test, you know, known to man, in terms of my heart, in terms of everything. Basically, it ended up causing a lot of stress in my marriage. Right, my wife and I love to brag about her. She was top of her class at West Point and first of her class in med school. And she would say, you know, no, this is anxiety. This is depression. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, this pain is in my chest. I mean, I probably had 15 trips to the emergency room.
Wow.
And I'm just like, so you're telling me that here's a guy who has done all these things, and you're telling me that I'm stressed out? Like, there was just such a negative stigma, right, involved with it. And in November of 2015, it kind of came to a head. I took a bunch of pills, and I tried to drive off a cliff. I tried to take my own life. After that, about a week later, this will mean something to the Utah Jazz fans out there. About a week later, I had the plans to do it again. And a kid that played for me, it was a kid by the name of Derek Pardon, who played at Northwestern. So I was going to Chicago to watch him play, because I was actually on a leave of absence for basically just going off on the administration, which I completely own, just by being depressed, on edge, anxious, all of the above. And so I was on a leave of absence, and I was going out to Chicago to watch one of my players play. Now, his coach was Chris Collins, who's Doug Collins' son. Now, Doug Collins obviously is the old coach for the Chicago Bulls. So I was staying at his house because I befriended him through various like Under Armour camps. One year I was out in Oakland working at Steph Curry camp, and I befriended Coach Collins, and we just kind of hit it off because, I don't know, Coach Collins is just an incredible man. And again, I'll make a super, super long story short, I was sitting in his living room, and after the game, Ohio State just played Northwestern, and I was eating a cheeseburger from Costco or Sam's Club, and I still remember that cheeseburger, which is kind of crazy because I don't remember a lot from that. But I still, I had plans. Okay, I failed in my suicide attempt, and I had plans to do it again. And I can remember vividly, Coach looked at me in the eye and said, he called me captain because I was a captain in the United States Army. He said, "Cap, you're messed up." He used some other language that we won't repeat on your show. But he said, you know, I can tell when someone's messed up, you're messed up. And he goes, you think winning basketball games is going to bring you happiness? Like, you got to go get help. And and that was the week where I came home and I told my wife, like, yeah, I'll go see somebody. I'll go get help for this. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be alive. You know, nobody beats the invisible enemy alone. Jenny, I know I've talked about you with that, and I know you have some history in your own family, but nobody beats this alone. You know, rewinding back, I went 6 years without coming out with my story. And I just couldn't. I don't know. I still don't know how to describe it. It was too painful. I would compare it to being an abused child. We won another state championship in 2017, and it was almost like I was vindicated. I was verified. Okay, I'm never gonna have to talk about it. You know, to bring it up again. And I was actually given a keynote on leadership, and I was working with a college volleyball team here in the area, and I was working with a team and got super close with some of these gals, and they were awesome. And I'm trying to think, the summer before the pandemic hit, that summer, she took her own life. I still have the email. A girl wrote me and she said, "Hey, Captain Quaz, so-and-so decided, you know, she took her own life." And I walked in my living room that day, and I told Laura, I said, I'll never not tell my story again. And she goes, well, you're not going to save everybody. I go, but yeah, but if I save one person, isn't it worth it? And so that's what I try to do. Then I think June of that year, there's a guy by the name of David Nurse who does a 1%er podcast, like the one I'm talking to now. And that was the first time I ever told my story. That was the first time I ever in public said, okay, I try to take my own life. Here's how I try to do it. You know, people, it's funny. People always ask about the facts. They're like, well, what happened with the cliff? And I really don't know. As a matter of fact, I a couple months ago, my son, and maybe I see this picture, Jenny. So, but my son was playing in an AU tournament. So I actually went back to the spot where I thought I tried to drive up a cliff. And wouldn't you know it, there was actually a barricade that was brand new or looked brand new. And Jenny, I sent it to one of our mutual friends, Craig Wilhelm, who's a mentor of mine. I said, Craig, does this look new? And he's like, he goes, yeah, brother, that looks new. And it was pretty emotional because it was like God was telling me, like, hey, knucklehead, you know, don't get any ideas. And yes, I do have suicidal thoughts. I have them. Yes, I do have them. But I'm to the point now where I know that my wife and my kids need me. I know my friends need me. And I know that the purpose God has for me is much bigger than the pain that I went through. And the other thing I'll say, and I know this will resonate with both of you, especially with you, Jenny, is I heavily compare it to, you know, like when Brent was deployed. You know better than anybody that the people who have most of the stress and anxiety and are the families. The people I hurt the most is my wife, are my kids. You know, that's probably the most painful part, along with my friends who say, my goodness, you know, why didn't you say something? And the day after I got sworn in, I actually had lunch with General Bob Brown. He's a 4-star, retired in Hawaii. He was the closest thing to my father that I've ever had in my life. And I told him I was going through some stuff. And he's like, oh, I wasn't there for you. And he got all emotional. And he's like, I wasn't there for you. I'm like, sir, how can you say you weren't there for me? You fought and you literally led our country in two wars. But even then, I couldn't tell him. I couldn't say, sir, I tried to kill myself. And fast forward, when I came out with that podcast, I sent him the podcast and I said, sir, just listen to this. And I, 53 minutes later, he called me. I can tell he was crying. And I'll never forget what he said to me. He said the first words out of his mouth were, I'm proud of you. And I can compare it to like being in the field for 3 days where the rain's coming down and you're in the mud and all you want is for the sunshine to hit your face. And for him saying he was proud of me was something I'll never forget because it was like, okay, this is okay now to come out with, you know, it's okay for me to talk about it. And then he said his next words were, you're going to save lives. And he said, the reason why your story is going to be so powerful is because of the thousands and thousands of guys and gals who've ever worked for me. You're the last guy I would ever think that would go through this. You know, you're the most positive, energetic. That was something that was something I'll never forget.
So I hear a lot of excitement and energy and like a zest for life in your voice. So I can imagine that, I think that if I knew you personally in the real world, I would never think that this would be something you struggle with. You said a few minutes ago that you still have these thoughts. This is ongoing?
Yes, Michelle. You know, if you ask, I mean, you can ask Jenny about my personality. There's A, and then I'm probably triple A, right? I would make coffee nervous. But yeah, I mean, you got to get to a point where, you know, I told you about my grandfather, right? Mm-hmm. And something that's always stuck with me is you write your own story.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, like, holy smokes. And I use the hashtag on my social media of winners win. And when I'm talking about that, I'm not talking about the scoreboard. I'm not talking about like being first or the only way you really lose in this life is if you quit.
And yeah, if you absolutely. Stop trying,
mm-hmm. And is if you don't give your best. And it's really the only time in my life where I said, okay, I'm going to quit. I'm done. And, you know, you just got to get to a point where you say, no, this is not how my story is going to end. That could have been the end of my story, the end of the book. And at that point, the devil has written my story or voices in my head that aren't telling me the truth, that are the devil's a liar. And I'm hearing things that aren't true, that I'm not a good enough father, that I'm not a, never being deployed and not serve, that I didn't serve our country. And I'm hearing all these things that are absolutely not true. And at that point, it's like, okay, this is not the end of my book. This is just a chapter of the book. And the person who's going to write my book is going to be me. And it's not going to be, you know, some voice in my head that's lying to me and telling me things that are not true. And folks have asked me so many times, Michelle and Jenny, like, what saved you? And I absolutely had to get help. Just like if you're going to be cancer, you would have to go to a doctor, correct? Like, I don't think, or at least not that I know of, I don't think anybody beats cancer on their own. Nobody beats the invisible enemy on their own. So if I didn't go get help, I wouldn't be here. That's number one. Number two, people ask me about medication. And yes, I have to take the proper medication. But the thing that saved my life is love. My wife told me she loved me every day at a point where I probably didn't deserve her love anymore. People have asked to interview her about this. She won't talk about it. I don't blame her. She should never have to talk about it. Having gone through her own struggles with breast cancer, you know, it's too hard for her to talk about. But every day she told me she loved me. And even if it was just, you know, scratching my back or when I was having a panic attack and I literally felt like I was going to die, just telling me it was going to be okay. I would tell all your listeners that nobody's ever died from being loved too much. And when it comes to the United States Army veteran, I think there's this big misconception that post-traumatic stress syndrome, it comes from, you know, killing someone or watching someone be killed. And not that that's not a heavy, heavy burden, but the number one component for the United States Army veteran is guilt, is for the fact that they let people down. And that's what I was suffering from, was an inordinate amount of guilt. And, you know, 51% of our veterans who have taken their own lives have never been deployed. Come 2023, we will have more veteran suicides than post-combat deaths since 9/11. Is that number not staggering?
That's staggering.
The other one I'll put on you is that when somebody takes their own life, according to Harvard, their kids are four times more likely to take their own life. You know, and going back to what I was just telling, Jenny about, you know, about how your spouse is the one or your kids are the ones that, I mean, I put my wife and my kids through hell. But just this last September, and I apologize because this is really hard to talk about.
There's no need for apologies on this podcast.
Friend, yeah. my best friend, in February, he killed himself, and, he was very sick. He actually shot his wife three times. She lived. I actually saw her this weekend for the first time since she was shot by him. Going through that was eight times harder than what I went through myself. Because again, like I said, when it's people you love, and you, I had so many people say, "Oh, there's nothing you can do," and you kind of get sick of hearing that, because if there's nothing I can do, then like I said from the start, you know, what am I doing here? The way it was described to me was, you know, it was like, it's just like staging cancer. I probably had stage one. My buddy had stage four. He was hearing voices inside his head, slamming his head on the ground and, you know, doing some pretty, pretty crazy stuff. But the reality is if my stage one didn't get treated, ladies, I wouldn't be here talking to you.
I love that you're bringing this to our show, to our podcast. You know, losing a spouse, I've been in therapy. I was in therapy before my spouse died, and I have continued afterwards. And I think it was about maybe 4 or 5, maybe 6 months ago, I finally asked my therapist, I said, "Is it normal to hear voices in your head? Like, I hear voices in my head and I think I'm going crazy." And she goes, "Oh, honey, sometimes I'm doing group therapy in my head." I'm like, I think sometimes we don't realize, because it's not something we talk about, right? We don't go around sharing with each other. I'm like, I hear myself saying these things to myself. Like, we don't talk in that way. We don't converse in that way. We don't share our hidden demons or our hidden thoughts, or, you know, it's not something we ever talk about. So I seriously didn't know.
Michelle, listen, we cannot have trust without the truth. So we all want to mourn when this happens, But none of us, we don't want to do anything when someone's going through it, right? And that, right. And that is, that's the problem. Like, let me give you an example. And listen, I'm probably, I don't want to make this a political debate or, like I said, or religious, but Jenny and I are pretty well aligned, I think, when it comes to those type of things. But I'll give you a great example. When I moved out here, meaning I moved 20 miles out in the suburbs, I told my wife, I'm like, okay, we need to get a gun. We need to get a what? And my wife is like, are you a flipping idiot? She's like, she goes, listen, alcoholics shouldn't sleep with bourbon. And people who've tried to take their own lives shouldn't sleep with a gun under their bed. So, you know, and I was talking to General Brown and General Hamm. I'm like, listen, I'm not anti-Second Amendment. I'm not trying to take anyone's guns away. I'm just telling you in my own personal story, if I had a weapon, there would not be an attempted suicide. There would just be a suicide.
Right.
And I would not be here. So if I can just tell somebody one thing, and going back to my buddy story, like he had two weapons under his bed. And I know, I'm looking at his wife who is, and talk about a story. And eventually, Jenny, you're somebody I would love for her to talk to. Because
absolutely. You want to talk about
an American hero. Yeah. I think the story she's going to be able to tell as your story, as you know, it just means so much to me. There's probably two times where I just, like I told Jenny this weekend, I know God has forgiven me, but it's tough to forgive myself. But the two hardest times, one of them was past Memorial Day. It's because I told my story and I had a Gold Star family come up to me, the Thibodeau family, who they lost their son. He was a pilot. And, you know, this weekend was Father's Day. And I just think, you know, what those Taylor kids would do for one more minute with their dad. And that's just, you know, that's just really tough for me to stomach. And then the other moment for me was this past September. I was blessed is probably the wrong word, lucky enough to go into the Ohio Veterans Hall of Fame. And I'm sitting there with going into a Hall of Fame with Ulysses S. Grant and John Glenn and Neil Armstrong and Woody Hayes, like, oh my goodness. And they were getting ready to, it was during COVID. So the governor's office was here, but you know, they were doing it kind of remotely. And it was my turn to speak. And what they didn't know was the night before, my wife was given a clean bill of health. And, you know, Jenny will tell you, I feel like I'm pretty good on my feet. I could talk a little bit at least. And I couldn't say a word. I couldn't get a word out because I just started thinking about like none of this matters. I mean, none of it. I mean, you know, the awards we win, the money we make, you can't take any of it with you. Nope. You know, all that matters is our relationship with God, is our relationship with each other. You know, I know my beautiful redhead friend on this other line, she would do anything for, you know, for one more second with her husband. And here I was, you know, trying to take myself and my beautiful family. And, you know, we need to understand that sometimes we got to save people from themselves. And I'm telling you, ladies, if this was, I'm not here because of me. You know, that's my whole point. And I got to tell you, it's not all sunshines and rainbows. I know you all are so, you feel so grateful that I'm telling my story for your listeners. But I take my share of shots. I've had people say, oh, you're a narcissist. I'm like, okay, well, let's dive into that. So let's say what you're saying is true. Let's say that I am a narcissist and I'm just doing this for attention. So if what you're saying is accurate, the only thing I could do to prove you wrong is kill myself. And how much sense does that make? So if somebody is just looking for attention, what's the harm in giving it to them? Is there any harm in giving it to them? I just don't know that there is.
No,
nobody has ever died from being loved too much.
Right.
At least not that I know of.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so why don't we concentrate more on that? And I've maybe made this pivot in my life, ladies, where, like I told you at the beginning, I used to do things for people that doubted me. My guidance counselor said you wouldn't get into West Point, for people that said I wasn't good enough to play Division I basketball, and for folks that said I would never, you know, do this or be this. I don't do that anymore for those people. I do it for the people who love me, for the people who believe in me. And I've just learned how powerful those phrases are. I love you. I believe in you. I'm proud of you. And I've tried to use those as many times as I can. And again, I don't want to get emotional, but when I want to be inspired, I'm inspired every single time I watch Jenny's Taylor Talk. Every single time I am. And I just think to myself, like, my goodness, here's a gal who has been through it. And she's up there talking about not only how you should love your country, but why you should. And like I said, my friend was on my porch this weekend, and you know, her husband, now she knows it wasn't him. It was the sickness, but like, you know, his dog, they lost electricity in Dallas, and he never once showed any but she forgives him. Right. And she still loves him through all of that. And here she is with a trachea, and like, my goodness, like, where do you get that type of strength? And surely if people like, if Jen Johnson and Jenny Taylor can show that type of strength, then surely enough, all I can tell the truth. Right. And so then, therefore, if I can tell the truth, then somebody's going to trust me. And if just one person can trust me, then one person won't have to go through what I went through. And more importantly, won't have to put their family through what I put my family.
Well, I love your story, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing it with us. There are so many points that you bring up that are so important. Number one, somebody said that you needed help, and you finally took the step, which takes a huge amount of strength from the person who has to. You are that only person that can make that next step, which is to get the help. And you did that. And thank you for doing that.
Well, Michelle, you know, you said something. You were the only person. Like, I'm not a doctor, and my doctor reminds me of that all the time. But I do want to say there are techniques that I've learned.
Uh-huh.
Because, listen, when you get to 90% of these don't go the right way, correct? Like, so 90% of people and once they get to that point, they're going to do it. And folks ask me all the time, well, what can you say? And what I've learned is I go on the offensive, right? I don't play defense. What do I mean by that is when you get to that point, you no longer care about yourself and what happens to you, right? So if you ask suicide survivors, I would say 99.9% of the time, they'll say, I'm glad I didn't do it because of my wife, because of my kids, because of the people who love me, correct?
Right.
So therefore, what I like to do is when somebody's at that point, I flip it on them, especially the United States Army veteran, because they learned that the most important thing is the person to their left and their portion on the right. And you know, I never met Major Taylor, but I think he would agree with me. If I was sitting there with him, I would say, and he was having suicidal thoughts, I would say, don't you do this to me. Because if you do this, you're going to ruin my life. And at that point, when you do that, you are taking it off them because they don't care about themselves anymore. And now they don't want to let their buddy down. And yeah. I have found that technique is much more powerful, especially when it comes to Jenny and I's line of work, because our folks are so trained and ingrained to take care of each other that it has worked so many times, and it's pretty awesome to see. So when you say, hey, you have to take that step, I would almost even disagree, Michelle. It gets to a point where if somebody didn't force me to do that, you know, I wouldn't be here talking to you, right? If we really love each other,
which goes to my next,
we're going to tell people what they want, what they need to hear, and not what they want to hear.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to hear it.
Which goes to the next point that I was going to say that you brought up, and that's connection. And it's powerful. That's why we're all here, you know? We need each other. There's a purpose for you being here, not only for your family, but for the larger world as a whole. And sometimes we don't live our lives tapped into that, but it is absolutely true. And it's powerful. It's powerful to be on this planet together at this time. And we're all here for a purpose. And we all have to do really hard things. We all have to endure hard things. Jenny lost her husband. I lost my husband. You know, there's been other tragedies in our lives. And everyone around us has all their own stories of their own hard, hard lessons and hard traumas that they've had to endure. But the most important thing is connection.
I remember in 2006, I was taking my sister to Sloan Kettering. She was diagnosed with ocular melanoma. That's why my wife became a dermatologist. She came to our house and she had a purple bump on her arm, meaning it metastasized from her eye to the rest of her body. It was stage 4. She was given 3 months to live. I took her down to Sloan Kettering for chemotherapy. And we go down there and she's got, you know, 3 months to live. She ended up living for 9. But I remember being mad at God and talking to my sister. My sister's name was Joy. And she would say at the time she had a 2-year-old son. He is 17 now. And I remember saying, you know, like, how do you stay so positive? And she said, you know, well, maybe I'm going through this so her son Thor doesn't have to. And I thought, wow, that's amazing perspective. But when you talk about connection, Michelle, she was down there getting chemo. And I'll never forget this. You know, she's getting this, you know, I mean, and you know how that goes. I mean, she's getting the basically poison, which stops the proliferation of blood cells, right? And you're just watching her getting this poison pumped in her body. And I'm thinking, you know, what's the point, right? She's got 3 months to make it. And her nurse that was giving her her chemo was pregnant. And my sister, talk about connection, starts talking to this nurse about getting ready to have a baby. And you could tell it was her first child. She was super nervous. So my sister has 3 months to live. And she completely takes this conversation, right? She's getting pumped with chemotherapy, and she's completely changes the conversation and literally spends the next 2 hours talking and puts this girl's heart completely at ease with having her first child. And afterwards, I was just awestruck. I'm like, what a superpower, right? And she said, well, number one, when you give, you get, right? And she said, it made me not think about my own problems. And she said, secondly, she said, do you see the joy in her heart, you know, from just, and you're absolutely right, right? I mean, just connecting with people. And so many times when you can get out of your own, you know, when you can get out of your own feelings, right? And especially us guys, we suck at this. Number one, we suck at talking about our own feelings. So how are we supposed to connect with somebody else and how they're feeling? And if there's one thing I've learned from the election and from all the stuff going on in our country, is you can't tell people how to feel because they normally feel that way for a reason. I mean, right. There's a reason Jenny Taylor loves this country. There's a reason I feel the way I do about cancer. There's a reason I feel the way I do about mental health. There's a reason I feel the way I do about when someone says somebody's crazy or you know, they're outside of their mind, or we all feel the way we do because of our experiences.
Right. The lens so all that we can we're looking
do is,
through.
Is try to walk another mile in somebody else's moccasins and try to get to where they're at. And if we all did that, I think the world can be definitely our country can be a much better place.
Absolutely.
Hey, I love this, babe. I've taken so many notes about, you know, this whole podcast is about resilience, and it's about acknowledging the fact that life is hard and throws us curveballs that we would never have pictured ourselves facing. I know Michelle certainly didn't picture burying her husband from cancer. He was so strong and just active and healthy. And you certainly are a positive, upbeat person. I'm sure you never thought you would struggle with this suicide ideation and mental illness. I was married to a soldier for 15 years and never thought I'd be a Gold Star widow. I mean, let's be honest. But I've written several notes of things. Let's talk about resilience if we can kind of wrap it up with these last few minutes here. What is resilience? I've written one of the things you've said several times. It's being able to tell the truth. I can't get the help. I can't give the help. I can't create the connection. I can't rise above whatever my it is if I'm not willing to tell the truth. And you've said that several times. You had to tell the truth to your friend, tell the truth to your wife, tell the truth to your doctor or your medical provider. Good heavens, tell the truth to yourself. Inside your head that this is hard, or I can't do this, or I need help, or he needs help, or she needs help. And I love that you talk about only when we're willing to tell the truth can we really make those connections, can we really build that trust. And you also said telling the truth sometimes isn't what we want to hear. Let's be honest, whether that's about a cancer or whether that's about suicide or whether that's about a divorce or a job loss, or the list could go on. But being able to be real, being able to be honest, being honest with ourselves and those around us, I think that is a huge thing you've taught me about resilience, about being able to say in the same interview that you focus on winners win and you're never going to give up and you know God's got a purpose for you. and you struggle sometimes with feeling like your life might not be worth living. Being so honest to say it's both. I think we live in a society where we're very or. I'm either faithful or I'm fearful. I'm either strong or I'm vulnerable. And I want to say, good heavens, no, we're both. I become stronger as I let myself be more vulnerable. I build my faith in God or humanity or whatever it is as I let myself acknowledge my fears. And so I love how you've brought that up to say, hey, we got to go on the offensive here. It's not going to work to play defense if that's all we're doing. You know, we've got to really be proactive, opening our mouths, opening our hearts, and finding someone. We were in church yesterday having a great conversation with a woman who was sharing a little of some of her struggles in life. And she said the number one thing her father has taught her, at the time of recording yesterday was Father's Day. She said, he's taught me never to worry alone. That's all. Never worry alone. And if that means you have a counselor, a spouse, a friend, a God, a journal, never worry alone. Find someone, because most of the time, if we'll open up about our worries, we can either realize they're not as big as they feel like in our head, or somebody could help us find help to carry that worry, because maybe it's twice as big as it feels like in our head. But I love the idea. We got to tell the truth. We got to open up, and we've got to make sure we're not trying to worry alone. In this country, we talk a lot about independence. You know that you mentioned my TED Talk several times, that we both come from a military family background, and we love independence and freedom, and we should be self-sufficient, self-reliant. We focus on that a lot, self-esteem, but really we're missing the boat. Not all independence is created equal. We're not talking about isolation. We're talking about interdependence, the healthy kind of dependence where for me to be independent as a human being, I need you. So that means I'm not really that independent anyway, but I'm independent enough to recognize my life depends on those around me. My ability to rise up out of bed every morning depends on the faith other people have in me and the faith I put in them and in God. And so if we can make sure we remember resilience, I mean, we call this relentless resilience. Like, we got to just keep being resilient over and over again. That doesn't mean isolation. That doesn't mean I have all the answers.
Well, I think even this, Jenny, like, you even look at like TED Talks and everything. And I was telling you gals before how it's the hardest thing in the world when I have to talk, especially to a younger demographic, and I have to talk about taking, you know, committing suicide to a blank screen. I love this format. I think keynotes are things of the past, Jenny. I really do. I think people get so much more, like I get more, right? Because when I give a keynote, I don't learn anything. I'm just up there talking and telling my own story. But yet today, I mean, I've learned a lot from talking to you and Michelle, right? And listening, and it's given me energy bouncing this off of you. Listen, we have an epidemic coming after this pandemic. We are pack animals. We are not meant to be isolated the way we were. And I mean, the suicide rate for teenagers, for young adults is at an all-time high in our country.
Yeah.
I mean, it is at an all-time high. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I even think even what we do with keynote speaking, we're getting ready to do something for the AUSA, Jenny. And one of the things, you know, they wanted me to give a keynote on suicide. And I said, you know what would be better than that? I said, have General Brown interview me. Because the reality is with the Army, if I couldn't tell him, who's like another father to me, how do we expect that team leader, that squad leader to tell his platoon sergeant, his first sergeant, his captain? I mean, this guy was the most influential person in my life besides my father, Jenny. And I couldn't tell him because I can't even answer that, right? Because of pride, because of my feelings, because of whatever, right? So,
well, so it was powerful
we have to get better at getting involved.
Well, and I think the other message is that we need to be able to speak up and ask or call it out, right? He called it out to you. He said, hey, you're not right. We need to say to our family member, are you considering suicide? Are you okay? We can't be afraid of asking that.
Michelle, I hear that all the time. People say that all the time. As a matter of fact, I was getting ready to go and to do a keynote, and a guy said, well, we don't want to give anyone any ideas. You're never going to.
No.
People say that all the time, and it's just not
true. People think that, people, the mystique around it is that people believe if they say or suggest it or ask somebody if they're thinking it, that that is going to create it. And nobody wants to hold that responsibility. In actuality, it's actually the opposite. We have to start asking people. We have to say, are you okay? And just in the asking, the message is, I care enough about you that I'm really concerned. I care enough that I'm asking Correct. You this question. And it's an uncomfortable and it's a hard question to ask. But I care about you and I want to know that you're safe.
But think about it. So now in social media, in this day and age, right, I can communicate with you ladies in Utah. I mean, it took me 2 minutes to send Jenny a text yesterday and say, I know this is a tough day. You have those 7 beautiful children. Like, I'm thinking of you today. I'm thinking of Glenn. Like, that takes 2 minutes, right? So here we are now in this information age where we can do this more than we ever could, and we're doing it as infrequently as we ever have. Like, yeah. That's insane, right? It's gross negligence. It's unacceptable.
And it absolutely
the reality
is,
Michelle, in the Army, here's the truth. If I was still in the Army, now this is just, again, this is the world, the book, according to Captain Kwasniak, this is my story. If I was still in the Army, I'm very confident my buddies would have never let me get to that point. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
So again, I never met Brent Taylor, but I would bet my housewife and kids that if I was serving with him, that Major Taylor would look me in the eye and say, Captain Kwas, like, dude, look. So again, you get out of the Army and you trade physical fitness for happy hour, and the what we are incredible at, and that's what I love the most about being on the greatest team in the world, as I am there with my friend in Utah, is like, we're awesome at teaching that, right? But part of that is what we're not doing is we're not doing this good enough, right? So if we were in combat, we call it reactive fire. If the enemy fires, we call it shoot, move, and communicate. We lift fire and shift fire. Our squad would just sprint over to where our buddy is getting shot at. Yet it's happening in our own homes and we're not doing anything. We're leaving our buddy alone to die. And we have
Well, I think that that's the value of this podcast and this message, right? We have to start speaking up and we have to start doing something. We have to start talking about it. And I really appreciate you coming on and having this discussion with us today. I think that it does help to open up the conversation for those that will listen to our podcast, hear your voice today and hear your message. I mean, I hear loud and clear. We need to do more. We need to ask our friends how they're doing. We need to ask our family members. You know, there's a whole nother group of people out there that we don't really think about. But now that I'm single and I've been going out into these singles groups, I've been realizing there's a lot of single people out there that have been very isolated and alone. They don't have their family members. They only see their kids part time because they've been divorced or whatever. These people are really suffering and they're sad and they're lonely and they also need to be reached out to as well. So if you know a single person, who's your neighbor?
Nobody,
go out there and offer them a hug and
nobody,
check on them.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, nobody gets on Facebook and says, hey, I just got divorced. I just lost my job and I want to kill myself.
Right.
So understand that that's someone's highlights. I can't tell you how many folks tell me, I can't tell you how many teenagers told me, well, coach, my Snapchats aren't, my Instagram's not as good. Like, that's not real life. Again, you look at my social media and everyone's like, oh man, this guy had it all.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm still struggling with those thoughts. And I'll go back to something, you know, you said, Jenny, and you're so right, is when you just talk about, you know, God's plan. And for the longest time, and Jenny, you know this because you're my friend, I still, it'll always be hard for me to talk about. I mean, I can remember first telling you, I can remember, you know, being one-on-one at the CASA meeting and first kind of sharing my story with you. And then you tell me about your family. I mean, I knew about your husband, but didn't know about your family and some of the history. But it's hard. And for the longest time, it was like there was just so much shame and guilt. And now, though, the thing is, sometimes behind your pain is God's purpose, right? So now it's almost impossible for me to be completely mad, because the reality is, Michelle and Jenny, if I didn't go through this, I wouldn't be able to help people. And listen, I'm no doctor, and I'm definitely not a saint. or a savior. But the reality is like, I have been able to help people. And the best therapy for me is to do that. Like, it's the greatest therapy I can get is being able to help somebody that was in that place that I was in. And the way I describe it, it's like I was in a concrete prison, and it's like the door is right there, and anybody else can see the door, but there's nothing in my mind that can tell you that the door was there. I was just too sick to even see it. Sometimes you got to get to a point where you just want to get out of that room, and you think, okay, what's the use? Because I'll never get out of school. The reality is, it will get better. I promise you. I promise you it will get better. And if you're thinking, if you're listening to this podcast right now, and you're thinking to yourself, this guy's full of crap, I'm here to tell you that you don't want to take your own life. What you want is you want the pain to go away. And my physical pain was so bad, it got to a point where I'm like, okay, this pain will never, ever, ever go away. So when I tell y'all, do I still have those thoughts? Yes, I do. But the reality is, it pales in comparison to how bad that pain was. And now the reality is it pales in comparison to watching my buddy and his wife. So sometimes if you can get outside and try to help other people, you know, sometimes that's the best way to help yourself. And understanding that, like you all talked about with this connection, nobody beats it alone. Nobody beats the invisible enemy alone. My buddy went to West Point, went to Stanford. He was as successful as they come. Literally everybody loved him. He was, every room he went in, he was magnetic. He was gregarious. And, you know, just because somebody is looking all sunshine and rainbows on the outside, that doesn't mean that they're not hurting on the inside. And like you said, Michelle, what's the harm in asking, right? What's the harm in saying, hey, thinking about you today? I don't see the harm in that. And what's the harm in just telling somebody you love them? I have somebody that Jenny and I work with, and I won't use names, but she called me and she said she had a brother, but she was worried that telling him she loved him would enable him. And I said, listen, again, nobody's ever died from being told they're loved too much. Hey, I love you. People telling me that they never had a suicidal thought, but if something happened to you, I would be devastated. That was the most powerful for me. I need you. I can't imagine what I would do without you here. I've never gone through this. Sometimes, like, that was the most powerful thing for me to hear, right? It's, you ladies both know this because you have dealt with incredible loss. And okay, this will be a horrible example, but I'll use it, right? This is America. I can say whatever I want. I remember when my sister died. It was 2006, and I remember two conversations. One lady told my mother that she just lost her mother to cancer. Her mother was 93 years old. My sister was 32 years old. And I remember thinking, like, oh my goodness. Like, so you learn what not to say, right? Now.
Oh yeah.
Couple hours later, and we were, you ladies both know this, we had to be there for 7 or 8 hours during the funeral services. And there was this other lady who was my mom's friend, who was the loudest. We all have that aunt who's the most, you know, loud, just like, walking with a command voice, walking with a megaphone, always had something to say. Like, this was that friend. She walked up to my mom. She grabbed her by the face. She just shook her head and she moved on. It was one of the most powerful experiences of my life. She didn't say a word. Like, this lady had the inability to not talk. She was just always babbling, always nervous energy. And she grabbed my mom by the face and she just nodded her head up and down. And that always stayed with me. There's nothing I can say to you. You lost your 32-year-old daughter. I can't imagine it, right? And she didn't even say, she didn't say anything.
And just leaving
it
there.
She just nodded her head and she moved on. Yeah.
I prefer that method.
Those are the only two conversations I remember.
Babe, this has been so incredible to talk with you, to learn with you. I love how you said you've learned, we've learned. I hope our listeners have learned. We're going to have you come back sometime for sure. When you're out here in Utah, let's sit down with, I can think of several groups of people that it could just be so helpful to have these conversations. Thank you for sharing your story and your heart with us. Thanks to our listeners for being with us for another episode. We hope that you've enjoyed what you've heard. We hope it's been helpful to you or maybe someone you know and love who might be struggling. As always, we invite you to subscribe to the podcast, give us a rating and a review, help us know how we can improve things, and get the message out there that there is connection to be found. We can be resilient together. If you or someone you know has a story you're willing to share, please reach out to us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient and Relentlessly Resilient Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their own lives. Have a great day.